podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
And welcome to Monday's Terrace Podcast, the podcast that definitely won't be trying to find the keywords that Livingston Football Club used in order to get some free Scud movies in their Twitter replies. I'm joined today on Glasgow Southside by two men from different ends of the Terrace Podcast experience chart. First of all, we've got Scottish journalism snappiest dresser, Craig Cairns. Hello, Craig.
Hello.
And at the other end, we've got Scottish football's biggest Metal Gear Solid enthusiast and one of the hardest workers in the Twitter biz, Stevie Dinn. Hello, Stevie.
Yeah. Hello.
Magic! So, as it's a Monday podcast, as always, we will be reviewing the weekend's action and talking about Kilmarnock-Aberdeen for the least amount of time absolutely possible. So we'll kick off with the highest scoring game of the weekend. We'll head for the Highlands as Livingston absolutely bodied Ross County 4-1. Goals from John Guthrie, Stephen Lawless, Lyndon Dykes, Jack Stobbs for Livingston, and a one consolation goal from Ross Stewart. Livingston remain unbeaten in 8 games this season, but is their first away game in 2019 after 364 days of getting bodied on the road. That was alright.
Holt said that they could have been better in the final third, which I thought was pretty funny.
It's very harsh, Sean, you have to say.
What I really enjoy about Gary Holt,
we should have scored 8.
What I really enjoy about Gary Holt most of all is that, see, if you watch every one of his post-match interviews, he starts every answer like he's already giggling, like he knows a joke that nobody else gets. So it's like, I don't have no idea what I'm doing last night. I'll do this.
It's going to be like you and Heal.
I'll be fine. Exactly like that. But who could possibly have foreseen that a midfield with Mullen and Spittle wide and Chambers and Vigors in the middle would be completely overrun by Livingston's Keegan Jacobs, Darwin Bartley and Scott Pittman?
You have to say, I've seen Harry Clark with a better defence than that with Ross County, you know what I mean? It was a disgrace. I couldn't believe that some of the goals I've seen. I think Joe broke down. He did this thing on Twitter today where he broke down like 12 separate tweets.
It's a good thread, yeah.
Unbelievable. I have never seen defending quite like that in some time. Absolutely. I mean, the Scottish football button, it's part of it still.
I've not seen defending like that since we played Joe Chambers at left back instead of in central midfield.
Do you know when you play a pinball machine and you shake it too much and it comes up tilt and it freezes everything so that the ball just runs down, you can't do fuck all about it? That's what Ross County's defender was like.
Except the
run tilt for the entire first half.
Except the ball had like 7 Livingston players chasing after it as well to punt it down the wee hole at the bottom. So, yeah.
The pinball machines still exist?
Sure.
Is that a dated reference?
I mean, every chance. I mean, there's no chance that anybody that listens to us is below the age of 25 anyway, so it'll probably be totally fine.
I'm thinking, I don't think I have seen it. I think they have one in Solid Rock in the town. But it's been about 3 or 4 years since I was last there. They may have to get rid of it. I don't know. I'm not going to go in just to investigate and see. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen, Craig. Sorry.
Livingston are hugely impressive in the first half. As much as Ross County were very, very poor over that period of time, Ross County very poor, Livingston absolutely took their chances and looked very, very impressive going forward.
I mean, they scored from... The first 3 goals were from set pieces, which we know, Livy, that was their big strength last season. But I watched the game today, and even beyond that, they played a lot of good football. They still want to get the ball forward as quickly as they can, but it's targeted long balls. They've got Dykes, who's good at holding it up, and they've got guys like Pittman buzzing around them. Both of those had very good games, but they played a lot of good football in that match. And but that fourth goal that they scored, which you have to say, County ended the half with their only kind of good spell of the game. Scored the goal, and then come out second half and you think, well, we've got something to kind of to fight for here, a wee bit of encouragement. And then the counter-attack and the finish was just unbelievable. I mean, I don't think we'll see a better goal this season, to be honest, in Scotland.
Again, as good as the goal it was, that was from a Ross County free kick at that end of the park. And Kettlewell, after the game, was saying at length, all the things that we've been praised for since we came back into the top flight, we did none of those things today. So it's a real wake-up call for them as well.
I think as well, a lot of people were saying with Livingston, I have seen people on Twitter saying they were favourites to go down, but I think with their second season, they've got more experience now. Proved everybody wrong in their first season, and they didn't play like that team that were going to be favourites to go down at all. They were really good.
And as you're saying, with Dykes up front, when they started recruiting players at the end of last season, so at the start of this season. I think we all said it's either they're either going to work very, very well or it's going to work very, very poorly, and the recruitment might be very smart, it might be very targeted in terms of the players that they're bringing in. I think we discussed a bit about how they were looking for, I think Livingston are more than anybody else in the league looking for players that will fit in a with a particular character within a squad.
Yeah, and within a certain system. It seems like he had a system in mind and brought players in to do that, like Dykes to play as the lone striker and Bartley to come in and screen the defence and add leadership qualities, and Guthrie, who he's brought in there to play centre-half, is another monster centre-half, and now they've got a another monster centre-back pairing, you know what I mean? And Stobbs' goal as well, that was his first goal, that was his first senior goal as well. And he also got subbed on and subbed off in that game because he was puggled. He's not played since February or something like that. So that's a decent way to announce yourself after all those.
I know I'm only here because you and Taylor couldn't make it, right? It's the big dog podcaster, and that's fine, Ewan, I'm sorry. But he did say today in his amazing Simply the Rest blog that Jack Stobbs, as good as the goal was, are we going to talk about that haircut? Because it's a shocker, isn't it?
It looks like it's been done with a set square.
it's bad.
It's a weird fringe, isn't it? The rest of it's all right. It looks all right for the side and for the back. But
thing is, I'm going for a transplant soon. That's a shoot. I actually am, right? But so see if the guy turned around to me and he went, look, that transplant's not going to happen for you, but I've got another option. You can go with that guy, Jack Stobbs' haircut. Or you can stay with the one you've got, an extreme pole, if you will. I would have to take my current haircut because that is a shocker.
Just go straight for the Agassi over the set square.
Yes.
Excellent. But obviously, it is a bit of a wake-up call for us County as well.
Right.
And it was always going to happen at some point in the season. And it all depends on how they bounce back from that just now as well. I mean, as I say, as I was being sort of fairly facetious talking about their midfield, that is such a lightweight midfield, which I think all of us pinpointed.
But they have Draper, and Draper will be in the next game. I've got no doubt about that. After that performance, Draper will come back in. I'm surprised that they haven't either played Draper with those two or instead of one of those two already. But I did say a couple of weeks ago that's the part of the team. The centre of defence was the part of the team that I was most worried about. Just last season, it was their Achilles heel at times, even though they won the league, and they haven't really improved the centre of defence.
They've lost Jamie Lindsay as well in there, who was he's not as sort of a big sort of strong boy as Ross Draper is. He had so much energy within that as well, and in a way which Ian Vigels and Joe Chambers certainly do not. Absolutely credit to Livingston for that. So we'll move on to the next game. So that'll be Celtic 3, Hearts 1, with goals from Christoph Berra, Callum McGregor, Craig Halkett for Celtic, and Connor Washington for Hearts. So Stevie, does Celtic make any sense at all at this point in the season?
Well, I think when I did the Celtic preview with Craig Fowler, I did say that I am the type of Celtic fan that genuinely, if Neil Lennon was to play two at the back, for example, a lot of Celtic fans would naturally be up in arms and going, what's he doing? What's he doing? This is shocking. I want him out. And I'd be going, it doesn't matter. He could play ball and goalie at the back. We Anthony Ralston. And I would still be very happy with our midfield and the attack. Because when you look at it, we've got the strongest midfield and the strongest attack in the league. We shouldn't really be concerned about a couple of dodgy players that we've got. So that's the type of Celtic fan I am. I've been very consistent with that, as you know that, when you read the blogs and that. And when I saw the lineup, I was told beforehand that Fraser Forster would be starting, and I said it in my Celtic group chat actually, and people were were going, Forster's just getting rushed in against Hearts. I don't think you can beat it. And I'm going, what are Hearts going to do?
What are they going to do?
Now, look, Bilal Abdullah and Kefiel Ahmed, right? The two Glasgow Airport Bombers, and they have a better record in Glasgow than Craig Levein. Let's not kid ourselves. Right away with Craig Levein, I thought, this is a Craig Levein Hearts team. They've not taken points as it was Robbie Nielsen's last 2 points of us in 2015 September. And I just knew right away that it doesn't matter what team we put out, it was a win, and it was a straightforward win at that.
How do you think Celtic played? I watched the game, and I actually didn't think that Celtic
played within ourselves
that well.
No, we played within ourselves.
There was a few shaky moments defensively, and I think that Hearts just weren't good enough to capitalise on it.
Hearts do. Celtic played within ourselves, but they can afford to do it against that Hearts team. And I think you'll see a better Celtic performance next Sunday, obviously. They'll be more on the ball, and they will make changes for that. But I don't think Celtic had to be anywhere near the best, and that's a big indictment on the state of that Hearts team, if I'm honest.
That was the annoying thing watching it from a Hearts supporter point of view, was that Celtic didn't look that good, but we didn't lay a glove on yous, other than the penalty, which the game's gone by then anyway. The team that Hearts put out, it's not a bad team. There's good players in that. And Graham and I just recorded the Patreon before you came round, so if guys want to go away, you can hear me on an extended rant about Hearts. But I think that the product has to be better on the pitch for the squad that we've got, and Levine's the common denominator there and has been for this entire calendar year, and it's just not good enough. It's not good enough going to Celtic Park and letting Celtic perform that poorly, because there was times when the defence was all over the place, when Forster was rushing out of his goal and chesting it and then getting tackled, and then there was bits when Julian carrying his form over for the last couple of games, but Hearts did fuck all to lay a glove on Celtic.
Yeah, you're right, and I think after seeing Celtic Hearts games, it was always a tough game for us. I always used to know, even at Celtic Park, games against Hearts were a struggle. You had to battle, you had to fight. And one thing I've noticed is Hearts in the last few years don't have any battlers or fighters now. They don't even make games hard for us anymore. It almost seems like, I joked with Robert Buffy before, it's a natural three-pointer for us, especially at Tynecastle, up until maybe, you know, the last couple of seasons.
And there's been a couple of times when Hearts just out of nowhere get a result. Yeah. But in Glasgow, definitely. We don't do anything at Ibrox or Celtic Park, to be honest.
I think, again, that's a mentality with Craig Levine, and it's only really him that can change that. It's either he changes his tactics and his style, or he goes and Hearts get somebody in to try and compete against that.
So just a little bit more on the Celtic team as well. Is James Forrest playing on the left of Celtic's midfield, just to get out the way of Chris Iyer? Because if he gets in the way, he's just going to run right over the top. I mean, it's going to be that sort of rolling stone.
Wenning used to always swap the wingers around before and all that. But I have to say, I think even Forrest out on the left is fine. Iyer on the right, he was fantastic for us. But there's a danger with that. There's a danger with expecting him just to naturally do that. And again, no disrespect, but bigger games.
Yeah,
and all
against
that.
Against Motherwell at work, against Hearts at work, against bigger games, it maybe becomes a bit of a challenge. But I've been so impressed out there. My main concern with it is how he's essentially messing with my brain, and that's not what a right back looks like. Aye. A right back does not look 6'2" like Dolph Lundgren tearing both wingers and defenders from the back.
He's really came on leaps and bounds for us. I mean, this guy was 16; he was a captain. And all that, so he's always a natural football ability, but he's been great for us. And I think there's no surprise at Milan and all that we're looking at him. And I think he'll be with us for a couple more seasons, but he'll probably be our next player, I think, I predict, after McGregor, to go for big money.
Smashing. So we will head off to Lanarkshire now, as Motherwell rolled into Hamilton and apparently took over the stadium, I believe, and thumped them 3-1 with Aki's with a consolation for Ross Cunningham. An own goal from Alex Gogic, Liam Donnelly with 7-7 now, and Chris Long as well for Motherwell as well. So I can't really decide whether or not, I still have no idea whether Motherwell are any good or rubbish. By all accounts, they actually make it to Hamilton, we watched a good chunk of the game. By all accounts, Hamilton were, certainly from watching it as well, Hamilton was dreadful, absolutely dreadful in the way that they do, and they go from game to game and look, you know, that's a serviceable team, that's okay, but the back line of a couple of kids.
Yeah, another youngster brought in, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Stanger.
Yep. And again, Hamilton, the boy Jamie Hamilton as well, who got himself put off for what was a Stonewall penalty and a Stonewall red card, as you're ever likely to see as well. Which again, I'll just, Brian Rice's comments on that I found a little bit odd, because Brian Rice feels that there's too many grey areas in the handball rule, which, while there have been changes in the handball laws, I'm fairly confident that stopping a goal-bound shot with your arm has always been a red card.
Yeah, and especially if it's stretched above your head.
Yes.
Hartley had two hands stretched above his head. What's he doing there?
Was he
claiming something? Or?
Just daft waving arms about in the way that he's entirely prone to doing.
Speaking of that red card, though, what a tweet where your man shuts up a loser. Did you see it at the weekend?
No.
Did you not see it? It was flying all over Twitter. Because, well,
so I spent most of Saturday on a slip and slide.
It's probably not going to. You would have to just see the boys' tweet, but it was a piece because obviously Hamilton went down to 10 men, but it came up in the BBC thing where Hamilton red card. to which the boy quoted it saying, well, of course they're getting beat, the entire team gets sent off.
Very good.
And very simple and effective.
Very
and
good.
As far as I'm relieved.
Very, very good.
The big man got the numbers in, so fair play to him, you have to say.
Congratulations.
And I thought as well, with Motherwell, there was meant to be a big sickness bug. Like, yeah. They made out as if it was a parasite infection or a murder base, so I had to get that Metal Gear reference in. That's, I know, a couple of dodgy rolls and sausage.
That's the one, that's the one. Yeah, as it turns out, rumours of that sickness bug were greatly exaggerated, given that it's only saw of Richard Tate, as far as I can tell, and that was pretty much it.
I was going to ask you where Tate was, because it's unlike him not to be in the team.
Poorly,
not to play, not to be playing left-back.
Poorly, I believe, is the long and short of it. But yeah, Liam Donnelly, again, 7-7 for him. Polworth and Campbell absolutely dominated the midfield in the game. Campbell has, as far as I can tell, he has been up and down at times, but he's never had a bad game at Hamilton. He came into the team for his debut against Hamilton at age 16, I think, with Boots Blackerland, Lee Wilkie's soul, and turned up in that midfield and absolutely chased everyone around that day. Then was out of the team for 6 months because Mark McGee. But he absolutely harried, chased like an absolute warrior across that midfield. And it was against a 10-man Hamilton Accies full of kids, and maybe they deserve a little bit of credit for sort of standing up in a game which could have been gone very badly for them. The first sort of 20 minutes, half an hour, we looked absolutely on top of them. Similar to the Celtic game as well. We were everywhere all over the park, and almost as soon as we conceded the penalty, you could see everyone go, right, let's not be daft here. We're down to 10 men, 2-1 up. We'll get another chance throughout this game as well. But for us, I kind of feel it's the beginning of a, without wanting to sound like coaching Twitter, it's kind of the start of a new cycle for Motherwell at the moment. And the reaction after the Hearts game, if you listen to the Patreon, you'll find Craig and I talking a little bit about the reactions in social media and how people feel about that. But the reaction after the Hearts game, I felt, was a little bit over the score, given that kind of regardless what happens in Scottish football, we should probably be getting beat by Hearts. Whether Hearts are good, bad and indifferent, Hearts are a much bigger, much better off club
Both teams play to their potential. Hearts should win the game.
Hearts should win that game. We weren't great on the night, which was a disappointment from that. But with guys like Seedorf and Hilton, you've brought them in from non-league or from youth football down south because they have a talent which we can mould. Over the past few years, there's been a whole series of guys that we've brought up who have been on the scrap heap for whatever reason, through injury or through just being out of favour. The guys like Charlie Dunn, who was out of picture at a crap Oldham team and has come up and been a reasonably consistent performer for us, and we've made him a much better footballer over 2 years than he was to begin with. So we're back to the start of that again. We've got guys like Hilton, we've got guys like Seedorf, we've got guys like Polworth who have performed at this level. We want to take them a little bit further.
Tumble will come back as well.
Tumble will, well, at some point perhaps, yeah. Maybe, or I've still no idea quite what will happen with that. But a whole series of guys in there. We've still got Kasper Sloth to come in whenever he appears from wherever he is that he's hiding.
Is Robinson still searching for his best team, do you think?
What Robinson's searching for is a number 9. Long has looked very good, and he's a good goal, really nice goal.
Yeah, but I know he wears number 9 on his back, but yeah. he isn't a number 9 kind of target man, is he? He's more like a busy striker.
Yeah, he stretches the game really well, and he runs the channels really well, and makes a lot of run. His fitness numbers must be incredible, because the amount of ground that he covers over the course of the game is incredible. What we want is a number 9. We need a recognised centre forward, along with St Johnston, along with Kilmarnock. Everybody wants that thing. And I think it's essentially whoever ends up in the top 6 will be whoever signs Kyle Lafferty. I think is the answer to that, because one of them
is Aberdeen, not maybe strongly.
Well, there's also at the weekend as well. They were talking, I'm sure on the radio, they were saying that St Mirren, there's some sort of mystery signing that they could make this weekend. Lafferty was the one that popped into my head.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to sign for somebody. You know what I mean? I don't even know if he's St Mirren.
Stunned if he signed for St Mirren.
Yeah, I know. But it depends on how much. Sometimes clubs can get a financial backer from somewhere to kind of subsidise something, or sometimes it depends how much a player's willing to let his kind of wage demands drop and that kind of thing. But it might be,
or how much you get paid off from Rangers as well.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I'd be surprised as well, but it was just the first name that popped into my head without really doing anything.
So, Ismael Gwyn Calvez was on Instagram this morning with a picture of a plane saying new challenge. So again,
yeah,
he could be back in the game as well. But I think whoever the Lafferty ends up will be the deciding factor for whoever finishes in the top 6 out of those 3 at this moment in time.
And Accies, do you think Accies, they got hammered in the first game, they then did what they always do and they beat Kilmarnock the next week, but then they've been pretty shit since. Do you think this is This is going to be...
I'm not going to even say anymore. This is the season. I'm not going to say it because they constantly justify the odds and stay up. So I'm going to...
I just don't have much faith in the manager this time. And I was saying this last season as well.
I know, but it was this state when they were in the top flight previously. Year on year, I was like, this year. And then the year that everyone assumed somebody else would go down, that's when they dropped out. This year, as the season started, St Mirren and Livingston, you looked at them and went, oh, I think they'll be the guys. I think Ackies will be fine. I think this year will be the year Ackies drop out. They're reliant on, at this moment in time, like a 17-year-old winger changing the game for them. In the past,
Cunningham and Smith seem to be who they're hanging their hat on just now. Yeah.
In the past, they've had somebody like Greg Docherty, or Lewis Ferguson, or James MacArthur, obviously McCarthy before that as well, but they've always had like a central midfielder, or Andrew, who provides that bit of quality.
Crawford's another one,
Crawford's just central midfielders who just keep them moving throughout the game. But McKinnon looked just miles off at the weekend as well. They just don't have that, they don't have that quality central midfielder. And so if you're relying on particularly a young winger, it's a guy who's going to have to learn his game and learn how to be the talisman for a team at a very, very young age. And again, he's looked great. But we saw last year with like Jake Hastie, for example, came into the team and nobody knew how to deal with him for three games. After three games, teams figured out if you double up on him, he's going to have to try and beat two players, and he hasn't quite figured out how to do that. So unless Lewis Smith progresses incredibly quickly, I think they'll struggle. I think Ackies will go down. I'll stick to that in the meantime. All right. So we'll head to the capital again with Hibernian 2, St Johnstone 2. Adam Jackson, whoever he is, scoring. Florian Cumberi scoring for Hibs as well, before Michael Halloran and Jason Kerr with a late winner for St Johnstone in Edinburgh, which is at Easter Road in the same spot that they seem to do just about once a season.
Oh yeah, that celebration. And my favourite one of them is when Stevie McLean scores a late winner, I think, and whips his top off, and then he actually ends up behind the mob that rush to the front.
Yeah, he's just walking through it.
He's like in row DD or something like that.
The big man. So we actually got a healthy amount of notes from Tony Anderson on this as well, but my sort of looking at it, my feeling is that Hibs are sort of very fluid in all the very wrong ways for it, and that they're just not, the team is not, they don't know what, they don't seem to know what their best 11 is, like you're saying about Robinson particularly, but for Hibs even more so, they don't really know where they want anybody to be.
It doesn't seem like a system with Hibs. They do seem disjointed. Their defenders seem like they're getting on. They played Scott Allen on the right,
that's weird. Mad.
I mean,
he's been excellent this season
as well. But Scott Allen thrives with having, you know, midfielders there doing the dirty work. It's that he basically came in as like the big dog, where you had Heckenbottom saying, it's like the Don Homer scene where he goes, you know, Scott Allen, I have baked a special donut just for you. Now, that donut was definitely, the donuts have dried up, because if he's playing them in right mid, I mean, come on, that's, you're not going to get the best of Scott Allen, and then have something going to get the best at all.
There's a whole pile of evidence of Scott Allen turning up at teams, being stuck on the right, being stuck somewhere else, just play him in the middle, because every time he plays in the middle, when he eventually got a game for Dundee and eventually played through the middle, he was terrific, then immediately got punted back out again and ended up back at Hibs when he was then put back in the middle, and that's when he's in his best run of form. It's a really simple thing to do. And
even this season,
yeah, absolutely.
The little time that Heckenbottom's had him, he's playing through the middle so far, and he's been far away in the best players. He's been scoring goals and creating. Yeah, even like everybody came in their pants at that pass that he made in a 6-1 defeat. You know what I mean? He's been the best part of their season, and he moves him out to the right wing. I don't know. I just don't understand it. And the other thing that Tony was saying is, it seems like the way that Heckenbottom wants to set his team up is very rigid. Like, he gives them a box that they're kind of not allowed
Hibs
to go
has
out
never
of.
Been a rigid team. They've been quite free-flowing, smooth football.
It's the Hibs way, like, Stevie. They taught Brazil how to play.
It's a strange one.
He's saying, like, the likes of Lewis Stevenson and Gray, one of their strengths is kind of getting up and down, and he says that they barely go past the halfway line now, and it just seems like quite a rigid formation.
Particularly if you're going to do that, if you're going to play Allen on the right wing, which, as we agree, is not the best thing to do, but if you're going to do that, you have to let Gray get outside him, because that takes the man away, that gives him the space that he wants to play in. So asking Allen to, number one, track Matty Kennedy, who's one of the best wingers in the league, without having Gray go past him, which then gives him no space to work in, and is asking him to do an awful lot more work physically than he needs to be doing, none of that makes it, like, one bit, if all of those work together and you figure out, if you figure out, oh, there's more space out on the right-hand side because maybe Kennedy won't track back in and maybe Tanzer's a little bit more defensively suspect, and that might work. But without Gray making that run, without Gray making that space, it's not going to work. Or without asking one of the central midfielders to come out and cover Kennedy, that goes
to what I was about to say, actually. Someone like Bartley, I mean, Bartley obviously wasn't great for the last season for Hibs. He had his uses in certain matches, like they'd bring him in for the big games or the derbies, and he would be in his element in a derby and in a battle, basically. But so it's not so much that they needed to keep a hold of Bartley, but they didn't really bring in anybody to replace him. They don't really have a defensive midfielder. They have Vela, who they seem to want to play there, who doesn't seem to be like that kind of player. So yeah, Bartley maybe wouldn't have been any use for or changed the result against St Johnstone there. But he's a type of player that they're missing. Yeah.
Massively.
But all credit to St Johnstone. They've had a very poor start to the season, and that's 2 weeks in a row now they've been behind and come back. Obviously they came back from twice in this match, and they were 2-0 down to Livy the week before. 2 weeks that it would have been, because it would have been the week off for the League Cup, and they've come back and got a draw there, so fair play. St Johnstone have had a habit, they've not always done it, but there was a run of seasons where they had a habit of starting poorly and then eventually putting it together, and I think they'll probably do the same again this season.
For St Johnstone fans as well, this year is Tommy Wright. I think we'll be on the third version of Tommy Wright, because we had the kind of dull Tommy Wright, then we had the really exciting Tommy Wright for a really short period of time, then we went back to dull Tommy Wright.
Now we've got the glasses wearing.
We've now got glasses wearing.
That was a good part.
It was very good. I mean,
who's it aimed at?
Everyone.
I still don't know who it was aimed at.
The press, the papers, Hibs fans, everybody, just anybody that was there.
I wonder if it
the
was.
New Hibs, the new Hibs owner, maybe he was up there as well.
I wonder if it was the press box.
Absolutely not.
Unless he's been reading TGIDS blog, it could have been me. But I was not. Thomas, I wasn't at Easter Road. But I constantly do berate St Johnstone in my articles. I have an irrational hatred of them. I'm very upfront and honest about it. I don't know what it is about them. They're just there. It's like a lot of people say Hamilton are that team. For me, St Johnstone. But I do have to grudgingly say that was a good result for them there, to salvage that, because I thought St Johnstone away against Hibs for that season, the start they had.
Mm-hmm.
It's an automatic 3 points for Hibs, but no, they proved me.
And Hickenbottom has had a good results against teams like St Johnstone. It's the teams that finished in the top six last season is who he struggled against, that he's barely got a win against. I think he's got a win against Hearts and maybe one other, and the one against Hearts barely counts. And it's just like when he first came in, when Hickenbottom first came in, he had a run of games that were like St Johnstone, Hamilton, and he,
Dundee and all that.
He was unbeaten in the first five or something like that, or the only one he lost was the cup game to Celtic.
Celtic it was.
But the league games, I think he went five league games unbeaten, won four of them or something like that. That's off the top of my head, sorry, but something along those lines. And then he barely won a game in the top six, and that pattern's continued. And you can kind of understand the Hibs fans' frustration. We've not talked about his comments or anything yet, but you can kind of understand the Hibs fans' frustration when they see their best player put out onto the right and it not work, basically. And then they see him come off, and maybe they're not, as Tony said, maybe some people are not necessarily booing the fact that Alan's being substituted off after playing 120 minutes the previous game. It's more that, well, you've just wasted an appearance because you've just played him on the right where he's not comfortable. And both Sports Scene highlighted it, and Tony pointed out the only two times that he actually did something was when he drifted into the centre himself and made something happen.
But just as I'll just finish off what I was saying about Tommy Wright on his third generation of Tommy Wright, and he's now, I think it's with the glasses, and he looks slightly more like a school teacher, and he now trusts youth. So we've got youth trusting Tommy Wright as well. Because you had, obviously, Clark's 27, but then you've got Duffy, Kerr, Gordon, Tanzer, McCann, Kennedy, Kane and Hendry, who are all 24 or under as well. And then you're sprinkling in, like, O'Halloran, Davidson, Craig, Swanson. And it's a real change in the makeup of that St Johnstone team as well.
They started that process last season, didn't they?
Yeah, just started dropping them in. But that's, for what is the sort of accepted truth, that St Johnstone teams are old, ageing and stuffy. they're not at all. It's really not what they are at all. And you've still
if I know anything, still... that will be that trope will be repeated for years beyond now. Even though, like in the media, it'll be repeated for years and years with absolutely no evidence to back up. Because that's what happens. Once these things get labelled with one of these things, it sticks. I'm saying this as a bitter, big Physical Hearts fan.
But yeah, I'm trying to change the narrative on this as well, because it is a young St Johnstone team. Still got Dre Wright to come back as well.
And one of those players who we spoke a couple of weeks ago about them still never replacing Chris Miller, like that kind of player, and this Alistair McCann looks like he could be the kind of ball playing centre midfielder that they've been
Justin Johnson fans talking about him as well, particularly in that his first game, I think it was Olivia in the first half, just a shocker. And Tommy Wright of all perhaps may have gone, get the fuck, I'm not dealing with you, but he obviously trusts him, or ultimately doesn't have another great option in there, but he's given him the chance, and they were saying that I'd certainly from looking at the game, it looks like he's grown into the game an awful lot more in there as well. I'd also like, just on the Scott Allen shrewball, Liam Craig's shrewball for the O'Halloran goal was not quite, obviously not as good, because nothing's as good as Scott Allen's shrewball, but the Liam Craig win for the Michael Halloran shot that Ofer Marciano jumped into another postcode to avoid was very, very reverse pass, was very, very worth watching. So we'll move on to another, the other of Sunday's games, as Borna Bear grabbed Rangers a 1-0 victory in Paisley. So, Stevie, I presume you watched this.
Yeah, you came back. I'm a Celtic fan, but yes, I watched the Rangers game. I did. It was dreadful.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of quality.
A lot of that. I don't know how many St Mirren fans you have listening to the show, right? But St Mirren contributed to why that was a terrible game of football. Had they just went for it against Rangers, it would have made for a more exciting game. Now I understand why they
got annihilated, though. Do you not think?
I understand why they played the way they did. I get it, and I'm sure the fans would have rather seen 1 point instead of none.
Yeah,
but it was just a horribly stuffy game, and conditions and the weather. It was minging to watch. Some goal to say, although you have to say, what a free kick.
It looked like it was maybe going to be a bit more open than it was. I think in the first 3 minutes or something, Defoe had that chance, which I don't think he had. I don't think he knew how much time and space he had there, and he just kind of hits it on the turn.
He had to take that round the goalie.
He lashes at it kind of on the
turn. I thought watching Rangers, they did miss. It was like a physical battle with them. They were up against the in defence. Defoe is a totally different striker than Morelos. Yeah. That was a game for Morelos to do his bulldozer
part. It seems to be at the moment, and this might change next week actually, but it seems to be at the moment that Morelos is his European striker and Defoe's his domestic striker. And you can't really argue when he's kind of scored a hat-trick against Hibs.
When they're both just firing.
It's worked up until this point, and obviously I know it was East Fife, but he scored a very good goal against East Fife as well the week before. So when he has been playing in the domestic matches, he's been scoring, and Morelos is just more suited to a lone striker role when it comes to the European games, when you're not seeing as much of the ball and sometimes you have to just hit it direct to relieve pressure and that kind of thing. But I thought it was going to be a bit more open than it was, but you're right, St Mirren just sat in. The two centre-halves gobbled up everything. I thought McLaughlin was excellent.
I thought McLaughlin was absolutely terrific.
Both Foley and Flynn in front of the back four were very good as well.
I mean, I've been hugely impressed with St Mirren. I'm sure I said it was the first sports scene of the season, and the team graphic flashed up, and I thought St Mirren were going to be in bother this season as soon as the team graphic... They're not bad. 1-11 in that team looks like an entirely reasonable team. And this was, as Goodwin said after the game, sort of the start of the season I've had of Hibs, Aberdeen, Rangers.
Yeah.
3 points out of that, whether you're a good team, a bad team, or a different team, that's a decent.
They've not lost heavily.
They've been competing in every one of the games. Livy, Ross County, Hamilton, the next three run of games is a much better judge in terms of how good, bad, again, how much of a. What kind of a season they're going to have.
It's going to be interesting because in these games they're going to have to come out and actually play to go play for the win instead of stifling teams.
Yep. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how they are in a few weeks.
Aye, because obviously they haven't scored many goals in the league so far, but you've listed the teams they've just played against. So yeah, like you say, this will be a good test of where they are and what the likes of whether Bika and Durmas and these guys can kind of start getting on the score sheet and create them.
Yeah, and again, chuck in St Mirren probably in that pile with as I say, Motherwell, St Johnstone and Kilmarnockoff. Possibly needing a recognised centre forward. The Obika they've brought in the junior Marais.
Marais, yeah.
I have no idea. Why did I oversubscribed in players called Junior? I don't care anymore. I can barely remember another Junior that played in Scottish football, but they all played for St Mirren. Anything in the Hellanders penalty claim?
I think the analysis on BT Sport was quite good. I don't think the referee sees this right enough. I mean, he's maybe got to the conclusion in
the
wrong
way. He's
got the right answer, but the wrong way. But you can see Obika's knee hits or comes into contact with Hellander's ankle, and that makes Hellander fall over. So, I mean, if that hadn't happened and Hellander had just slipped, then yeah, it's a penalty to St Mirren. But
well, Craig, I'm just going to counter that and say it's a logical conspiracy that it's a big Masonic witch hunt against us.
What was his name and where was he drinking afterwards?
just a round of this, obviously it's a big week for Celtic and a big week for Rangers as well. You'd imagine Celtic will see out the European tie.
Oh, it's done. It's already in the bag.
Rangers, what is a successful week for Rangers? Go out in Europe and beat Celtic? Go through in Europe, lose to Celtic? Or do the Celtic, the Rangers,
I think
win
Rangers fans will be looking at that as, if they want to be big dogs, they have to win both games. End of that. And I think a lot of Rangers fans will say that.
Yeah, I think especially after winning the two games at Ibrox last season, is that correct?
They did, yes. It was comprehensive as well.
After doing that and then being better on paper now and starting this season better, I think, yeah, I agree with Stevie that they'll be looking, Rangers fans will be wanting the Europa League group stage, and they'll be wanting to set a marker down in the Old Firm next week, or the Glasgow Derby. Sorry, Stevie. Get my jargon right when you're on.
I'm just about to stay, have a protest there and walk out this flat.
As long as it's not protesting, that's fine. One game to go, and as always, because it's nothing each, Kilmarnock 0, Aberdeen 0.
I'm just going to sleep in the couch, you know that.
I've seen a bit, Stevie. Right, we'll finish this, we'll round this off for you. Are rumours of Alessio's demise over-egged? Craig Anderson again sent us through a whole collection of notes on this as well, and certainly from watching the highlights of the game, looking at the game, Kilmarnock, there was a lot of sort of chatter about the players didn't want to play. The players are playing for them. The players are being as professional as they can possibly be, but they are a Kilmarnock team missing Jordan Jones, Yusuf Malumbu from last year. I think if you drop either of those players into that Kilmarnock team just now, they just seem a bit one-dimensional. There's not an awful lot there going forward. They look fine and sort of grafting and workmanlike, but there's no real quality to turn a game in the midfield or somebody going to beat somebody there.
Brophy looks as if he's struggling up front as well.
So far, again, there's just no one anywhere near him.
And there's no one to put pressure on him for his position either. That's they're lacking a few forward options.
Definitely.
But I think, at the same time, I think they're not far away. If they can make a couple of additions before the transfer window, they don't look far away from being a decent side. They're not going to get anywhere near where they finished last season. But I think under any manager, it would be difficult to replicate that, to be honest. And you talk about the players not playing for them. Gary Dicker was on Sportsound, I think, last week, and I don't think he quite sounded as enthused as he could have about Alessio, but he didn't sound like he was, at the same time. He didn't sound like he was, because he hadn't played the previous match. And that I don't think that entered into his thinking. I don't think that made him, I don't think he didn't sound as enthused because he hadn't played in the previous game. I don't think it was anything to do with that. I just think he's probably privately thinking, yes, things aren't quite as good as they were under Steve Clark, but it's still early days.
That's an adjustment for
manager.
Everybody, though. Yeah, you've got to appreciate that for what it was.
New country for Alessio and all these kind of things as well. I just think that I keep going back to this, but I think there's just a bit of xenophobia in places when it comes to foreign managers coming here. He's the only one with the British Isles and the entire 42 clubs. And from the moment he came in the door, there's just been all this
negativity.
Yeah, like, oh, is he going to have them he's going to tear it all up and have them playing like AC Milan. He wants them to play like AC Milan, all this kind of stuff, before his team had even kicked the ball. And yes, okay, they got off to a shocker, but still, Jim Goodwin takes over at St Mirren, and the noises from the same people are, he'll be wanting to put his own stamp on the team. You know what I mean? I just think there's people are too quick to jump down the throat.
It's almost as if people
managers
are still having horror nightmares over Bertie Vokes. But then when you look back
you
on it,
playoff, Stevie.
I know, but no, I'm defending him. I'm defending him. But when you look back on it, Bertie Vokes wasn't the big problem that people made out to be.
Not even close.
So yeah,
I see plastic pitches have claimed another victory.
Right,
as well.
This is another thing I wanted to bring up.
injuries, I can see it.
Well, no, there's two things, not just the injuries. It wasn't even the injuries thing I wanted to bring up. So apparently, there's never a good game on a plastic pitch, right? Which I think is a myth. And people are talking about how this game was terrible, and it was terrible because it was on a plastic pitch. Now, Aberdeen, well, I've got it here. I think Aberdeen have scored 2 goals in their last 5. Kelly had scored 2 goals in their last 5. They play out a 0-0, and it's the fucking pitch's fault.
Hamilton 3, Rangers 6 last season was a pitch on a plastic pitch.
It's nonsense. Did Hibs and Kelly not have like some crazy, crazy like 3-3 or beyond that? Yeah, I mean, to say there's never been a good game on a plastic pitch is just utter fucking nonsense. And then apparently McKenna's injury was to do with it being overwatered. That's what McInnes was saying. They said they soaked the shit out of it at half time and he slipped and did he tear his hamstring in the end? I can't remember.
I don't know. I presume if he'd torn his hamstring he wouldn't have walked off.
But anyway, he did something to his hamstring anyway. And there was 2 injuries in the first half in the Ross County game, Robinson and Fontaine going off. Nobody talks about grass pitches claiming another victim, to quote one headline today. Arnold Dume done his Achilles up at Dingwall. Berra was out for 4 months.
You're saying there's something wrong with the pitch at Dingwall?
Yeah, probably. That exactly. I mean, it's just as much. We should just start a campaign against Dingwall's grass pitch now, because it's claiming as many victims as plastic pitches. Berra was out for 4 months after doing an injury on a hybrid pitch. Tommy Hoban was ruled out for the rest of the season up at Pittodrie last season, and the evidence is inconclusive at this point whether plastic pitches cause more injuries than grass.
So I take it the rumours are true that you're going to be marketing manager for Power League next week, eh?
Yeah, I think we've proved as well I'm not behind that Twitter account that's currently trying to ban
plastic
pitches.
Which we will not mention at all.
We haven't talked about Aberdeen at all, by the way, but should we?
They were quite dull. As uninspiring as they have been in every other game this season.
What do for Kelly? For Kelly, they always seem to get turned over by Aberdeen at Rugby Park. Aberdeen have a lot of joy there, but for the highlights, so Aberdeen were never in that game. It was an awfully brutal watch for a 2-minute highlight package.
Excellent. Zoz?
Why not?
Excellent. Thank you very much for listening. Apologies, Aberdeen fans. It's not our fault. It's Derek McInnes's fault. Listen to the Patreon. We'll discuss his views on social media as well. We, as I said, the Patreon was recorded earlier on. You can sign up to that at patreon.com/tennispodcast. The guys will be back on Thursday with another show. I believe there will be an extra Patreon Dundee Derby special on Thursday night as well, as long as I can find a Dundee fan that will actually sit in a room with a Dundee United fan.
I think there's also a 2004-2005
season review from Joel and Fowler coming out today as well. Thank you very much, Craig, for hosting it today.
You're welcome.
Steve, you got anything you want to plug?
If I could just say a few words, maybe a better public speaker.
Hey!
Nah, I don't. I want to just say, Ewan, I'm glad I could fill in for you, because he was obviously the first choice. I'm just happy to be here.
You try to say we're a Rangers podcast. Somewhere down the line, you've got to pick one of them. It's like Elvis and the Beatles. You've got to pick either Rangers or Celtic. Everybody's secretly.
You're not just anti-Celtic. Everybody is. No,
correct.
So, thanks a lot for having me on. Really appreciate it, guys.
Thanks very much, Steve. Thank you very much for listening. Bye bye. Sports Social Podcast Network.